The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Ireland's savings specialists. Rabodirect, the straight-talking savings bank. The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Ireland's savings specialists. Rabodirect, the straight-talking savings bank.
Hello there, and a very good morning to you. And you're very welcome indeed to the programme this morning. And we'll start with the headlines. We'll start with the Irish Times. GSOC defends accessing journalists' data is their main story. And former civil servant lobbied Noonan over bank. That was John Moran, who went into foreign affairs, or not into foreign affairs, but into finance, actually, with Michael Noonan. Now, the Irish Independent, cash sweeteners to get elderly couples to sell family homes, incentives to free up larger houses, and huge price rises in commuter belt. We're back to the property market again, and its function or dysfunction. And older parents, the suggestion is that older parents would be given financial incentives to leave their large family homes and downsize to smaller properties under proposals being considered by the government. I imagine that would get general approval somehow from older people. Anyway, the Irish Daily Mail, O'Brien was a gang money launderer, and that is in inverted commas. And I noticed that a number of the headlines that deal with Ken O'Brien are in inverted commas right across the whole lot of them. Now, that's the Irish Mail. On the, by the way, on the front of the Examiner, there's a very nice picture of our Taoiseach. Obviously, they're all getting together this weekend. Gun cartridge on stage overshadows the Fine Gael event. And they also have, here we go again, trolley crisis worsens amid flu outbreak. But I just contrast the photograph on the front of the Irish Examiner, and there's a photograph on the inside of the Daily Mail of the very same self-same gathering of Fine Gaelers. And we were looking at it, it could have been taken in the 50s, in the 60s, in the 70s, in the 80s. Like, it just is like caught a moment in time and politics. And you can see not a lot of women there. But anyway, the Irish Daily Star, canal body dumped near victim's work. And the Irish Sun uses inverted commas as well around gangsters killed Ken. So presumably that's the word that's been given out, but with nothing definite to back it up, would be my estimation on that. Now, moving on Friday the 14th of November, that was 9 weeks ago yesterday, you will remember that there was the awful events that occurred in Paris. And on that day, my two guests here were in the Bataclan Theatre attending the Eagles of Death Metal concert when the terrorists attacked. And thankfully, they have both survived. David, you were shot and yes, you're still in a wheelchair. And since then, you've got engaged, so congratulations on that. And thank I hope you. That all goes very well. And what happened to you last night?
Oh, yeah. There was a bit of a ruckus in the Shelburne, a bit of a fire evacuation, a false alarm, but just very...
And how did you know about it? Or were, did they ring you up or what?
No, we were in our bedroom and we were asleep, actually, because we're wrecked.
And it was late, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was...
The room started to flash a blue light and the sirens went off and we just realised, oh, not again, like something's happening.
Just the idea of that sound of an alarm and the lights just kind of scared us straight
absolutely.
Away.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Well, I asked David to ring down to the front desk just to check if it was a false alarm, and he was told, yeah, it's a false alarm, no problem, and
just
kind of settled back. It might go off again. So
give it time.
It went off about three more times and David rang a second time and no answer, and then you rang a third time.
And we were advised to evacuate. There was no yes or no about it. It was almost like, yes, okay, there's something happening. We advise you to come down to the lobby of the hotel, you know, to evacuate. Again, I was in a room that's for wheelchairs. Yeah. I wasn't offered any kind of assistance or anything like that to come down. It was five flights of stairs on crutches, you know, it just...
Because presumably the elevator with...
The elevators are not allowed to be used, yeah, during fire alarms in general. I think that's just the way it works.
Why would you have wheelchair access rooms on the fifth floor? Again, or did you specifically ask for the fifth floor?
We didn't ask for that floor at all. I was just... that was the room that was selected. It was... It had, we'll say, wheelchair facilities within it, but it was on the fifth floor. And, you know, in the cases like this, it is quite a difficult situation for someone to get all the way back down.
How did you get down?
I had to use my crutches and go down the fire escape stairs slowly. You know, it...
Katie, it must have put the fear of God in you.
Yeah, I just felt a bit shaky or something when it happened, because it was... Friday night, it was 9 weeks to the day since it happened, and it just felt a little not again, really.
To be honest, every Friday kind of has that feeling sometimes. You just remember
it on edge, you're kind of waiting for something to happen.
You think that it was 8 weeks ago, it was 9 weeks ago. You think about the night in Paris, and you know, something like this. It again, in a normal circumstance, you wouldn't think it was anything, you know, you'd go down, you'd kind of maybe have a chuckle about it, but it was just the fact that we were so unnerved by what's happened to us
just
in Paris.
David specifically made aware to them when he ran down the first time that we were both a little nervous due to being in Paris and that he was in a wheelchair and using crutches. And it just...
And again, we just
these things
to know,
happen.
Yeah, exactly. Fire alarms happen, but it was just the way it was organised or handled. It just seemed to be no plan or evacuation process in place. And again, we had to make our way down, and it's slow when you're on crutches and you're trying to do five flights.
So. Yeah. Tell me about the night you had bought the trip to Paris as a surprise for Katie.
Yeah, as a birthday present. I guess it was kind of a selfish birthday present in a way, because I get to go as well. But I just thought it would be nice to spend a little weekend, a romantic weekend in Paris just before Christmas, do a little bit of Christmas shopping, you know, see the sights.
Yeah.
What everybody does when they go to Paris, I guess.
Lovely idea.
Yeah.
And on the night, can you remember how it all unfolded?
Yeah, the concert had been going very well. Everyone was enjoying themselves. It seemed fun. And it was maybe about three quarters of the way through the concert, this kind of scuffle noise from behind us. And
you were at the back of the hall.
We were at the back of the hall. And it was just, we were just inside the entrance doors. And we heard this kind of, it sounded maybe just like a scuffle, if you know what I mean, people kind of shouting. And then suddenly there was flashes and bangs, and we thought it may have been firecrackers. Some people threw in firecracker just to scare people.
Yeah.
We weren't totally sure. Katie turned to me and we both turned towards where it was happening. And at that point, all the people around us, everybody fell into a heap on the floor. Again, these were people that had been shot. So,
but you presumably didn't know that at the time.
Initially, I didn't think so, but it became very clear very quickly that it was people being shot,
right,
and that it was people were falling because they were dead, essentially, or they were had been shot.
And did you see the guys that were doing it?
An outline.
Yeah, I can remember a silhouette, but that was, I can't.
I was turning to David because, as David was saying, a scuffle came out of nowhere and I felt something splash me on the shoulder. So I turned to David kind of to ask, had a drink been spilled on me or him as well? And we fell. And I saw the flashes and an outline, a silhouette of a man. And that's, I kind of, the minute my head hit the floor, I knew what was happening.
It became very clear, yeah, the people being shot.
And so that was the beginning of it. But you were there for another half an hour.
Again, the timelines, it's difficult to remember.
Yeah.
Specifically how long we were there, but yeah, I think that's how long.
So you were on the floor.
Yep.
Presumably there was blood all over the place.
Yeah.
And I presume there was screaming and that going on, or no?
Well, there was screaming initially. The first burst of gunfire, obviously, it caused a great panic and confusion because they entered the back where we were standing and they just seemed to kill absolutely everybody standing around us. People up closer to the stage, I don't think, understood what was going on because they couldn't see.
Right.
They were slightly down. And we were kind of almost elevated slightly.
Right.
I don't think people understood what was happening for a while, and there was screaming. When we first fell, we got up straight away and we started to kind of try to run somewhere.
Everyone tried to run.
The shooting started again. We hit the floor immediately to kind of take cover, and that's when the screaming, in my recollection, it did stop. People stopped screaming in terror. Like, there's people dying, and you could hear people groaning and moaning, but even they were trying to be silent.
Yeah, I think everyone was trying to play dead, I guess.
Yeah.
Were you trying to play dead?
Yeah. I kept telling David to just stay down and stay calm and just
we were lying face down
low.
And just try and stay as, you know, still make it, I guess, feel or seem like you're dead and that they won't.
Because I thought you made a run for it at one stage and then went down again.
Initially, the first once they came in behind us, we fell with the crowd.
Everybody got up because the first burst of firing stopped and then
stopped,
it was almost when they went to reload, I guess. Everybody got up to get out, but when the second burst of firing began, everybody got down then.
But the doors were closed, and we didn't realise this at this stage, but all the doors were closed. And when we tried to run and when we fell in the last place that we kind of stayed for the majority of the time, it just kind of seemed inevitable that nobody was getting out of there. No. I thought if it was a gunman, they'd come in, spray the crowd and run themselves.
Yeah.
I thought there was just one person there, but then you heard the footsteps and the shouting to each other. I didn't know that there was three. I thought that there was one. But
yeah, we were face down, so we couldn't see what was happening.
Yeah.
But
you
could hear the gunfire. And like you were saying, the initial burst of fire, and then there was a second burst, and then there was individual shots after that where you could hear footsteps and someone just shooting individual shots, I assume, into people that were just laying on the floor. Probably dead or not, I'm not sure at that point, but it became very clear that nobody was going to get out of there, or they were there to kill as many as they could.
Right. How many did they kill?
Was it 89, I think, in the Bataclan, and I think 130
overall.
But again,
89 is an awful lot of people, and to be listening to it. Did you figure your number was up?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. We I think we'd said our goodbyes, and we said we loved each other, and we were on the floor, and I was lying on top of Katie, and I was just waiting for the bullet to aim at us, or the next shot to be us, you know? It just felt like it was inevitable that we would not come out of there alive. And it's a scary feeling, but, you know,
I can only imagine.
Yeah.
And how did you get out?
Well, I could see, because it was top to tail to Katie, so I could see kind of to her left would be my right, if you know what I mean. We were lying across each other. And I just, to my left-hand side, saw a set of double doors open. I don't know if someone outside burst them in or someone inside pushed them out, but I just saw the doors open, and instinctively, I just said to Katie, we got to move. We got to get out of here. Something, I guess, that split second told me, this is the way out. If we don't go now, we're finished. You know, and again, we don't know who opened these doors. About 25 to maybe 30 people ran with us at that point. But
and what were the gunmen doing at this stage?
Reloading. And they started to shoot at us.
They fired at us as we tried to leave. Because as we were on the floor, he had walked past us, and I could see his boots, but he must have thought we were dead, so he didn't shoot at us. But he, again, reloaded, and as we ran, they were shooting at us again as we ran out that door.
Yeah.
And again, no idea who opened it or how it became open, but that was our way
I'm
out.
Gosh, I'm sure you'd love to know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They saved your life, whoever opened those doors.
Yeah, and also someone had the presence of mind to turn the lights on.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because the lights had been off, because obviously you're mid-concert, there's a band on stage, it's dark. When we were lying on the floor in the final place where we were lying, the lights suddenly came on, and it kind of, in one way, it kind of opened our eyes up to the horror that was around us.
Yeah,
but
you saw everything.
It also helped us see where the door was and how to
get there.
Yeah.
So were you crossing by dead people as you went to that door?
Yeah, and it was just, you were looking at the floor because one, you don't want to stand on someone, and two, if someone's alive, you want to try and bring them. But there just didn't seem to be anyone. And I think that's what annoys me the most about the whole situation, is that where we were standing, everybody died. everybody died where we were, and we got out and we couldn't even help anybody.
It's, like I said, we were lying in the in a place where there was dead bodies around us, and how we came out of that area of the concert hall alive is just, it's hard to kind of, we know we're lucky, but it's a hard thing to comprehend, we'll say, all the people that didn't make it, you know.
Mm. I can understand that's on your mind, but you can still be grateful for it, and your families can be grateful as well. I presume at some stage, I think I read that you were hoping to make contact with somebody else that was there, just to go back over the detail with them.
It just feels like we've done a few interviews and took part in a documentary about the Bataclan, and we hear other people's stories, people from the balcony, people from the front of the concert. I just haven't heard anything about anyone who was close by us, and just, I'd love to read something someday that says I was by the doors where they came in and I'm all right, because we were going for food just before the concert and kind of people watching, because when I say there was a diverse crowd, there was a diverse crowd. You wouldn't see it in Dublin, really. Yeah, I've been to...
Mix of ages.
Yeah, everybody was there. And it was
lovely. This is ages and colour and race.
Just
and
everybody who could... Think of someone you wouldn't expect to be there, and they were there. Yeah. We saw a gentleman who stuck out in my mind particularly. He was very tall and oldish. And, you know, I was he was dancing. And I just thought, that is the greatest thing I've ever seen. Yeah. You know, someone of that age who kind of embraces all kinds of music and really enjoyed himself, and like, he was killed in it, so it's just kind of heartbreaking, because we were people watching and it was a great place to be in
really
a strange way. Like,
what happened?
So you when you got outside then, what did you do? Because presumably you didn't know what was happening or if they were going to come after you or anything.
No, I had been shot inside in the hall in my left foot, and I don't think it was until I got outside that the pain and the reality kind of my foot being actually shot
kicked in
exactly. So we ran down the street. Well, I, as
hobbled.
Best I could, hobbled exactly.
Yeah. I looked back at David because I obviously was holding his arm and we were running together, but I felt that he was kind of lagging behind me. And I turned to David and kind of said, you've got to move. Like, come on, stop. Like, it's not the time for this to sink in. You've got to get far away. And he said, I think I've been shot. I looked down at the foot and I just kind of hugged him.
Yeah, it was.
Started to drag him, essentially, as best as I could.
Exactly. So we had to get off the street, I guess. Yeah. You know, it was too dangerous. We just felt we had to get in somewhere.
Get away
from
that.
Get to a hospital.
Yeah.
You know, get as far away from the area as we could.
So how did you? How did that all pan out?
I started to try and stop cars. Most cars drove past. One car stopped and explained to me that they were too full and they just couldn't take us, and that they were going to try and take the people in the car to safety. So I was at this point panicked. The emergency services weren't picking up when I tried to ring them off David's phone. I had lost everything in there. I'd dropped everything. So I had no phone, so I was using David's, and the emergency services, you could just hear sirens all over Paris. Like, everywhere you turned, there was a noise of a siren. And when I was on the street, I was just trying to stop more cars, and a girl saw me from an apartment block and she must have come down to the gate, and she said, what's happening? What are you doing? And I said, there's been a shooting in the Bataclan and we need help. She opened the gate, took us straight in. She tried to explain that she didn't live in the apartment block, but she'd try and get us to safety. Immediately she took her scarf off, tried to tend to David's foot, which was just so helpful because they did stop. David was bleeding out a lot. Like,
I was trying to stay conscious at this stage as well. It was all a bit of a blur once I got out, because the pain was kicking in. I was losing a lot of blood, you know. It was pretty serious.
But we were in the apartment block downstairs and with the big glass panel, and I just said, there's fluorescent lights in here, so we've got to go somewhere safer. But the lifts wouldn't work, and eventually, after around about 20 minutes of standing in the lobby, we got up to a high floor, got out, and David lay on the ground, and just by a fluke, a doctor lived on that floor. And he came out and he helped David and he did everything to save David.
He was an orthopaedic.
It turns out, he had worked in that field, and he had worked in the actual hospital that he eventually took me to. And he knew what to do, I guess. And he kept us calm, mm-hmm. and he took my blood pressure, things like that, just to make sure. But he knew, I think, at that point that I needed to get to hospital pretty quick. There was...
That you could have bled to death.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. yeah. And like Katie was saying, the emergency services were so overwhelmed that by the time someone would have got to me, it could have been too late. So he basically was amazing. He saved me. He saved us. He braved going out onto the street in his own car with his neighbour to take me to a hospital in the midst of all of...
Chaos.
All the chaos that was outside.
And presumably fear and uncertainty. Mm. Did you know at this stage what had happened elsewhere, like in the restaurants in the Stade de France?
No, but when we went outside and there was just sirens everywhere, I kind of thought this is obviously something bigger than what just happened to us, like, because there was no police when we got out. So to hear the sirens and to know that there's no police with us just yet, so what's going on? It just all started to... I knew we were in danger no matter where we went.
Right.
But the doctor, I think he knew. He told us, you know, Paris is at war and, you know, just stay calm. And
it was
I think
on the
he
news
knew,
at that,
yeah.
It was on the news at that
about
stage.
The restaurants.
And I guess at that stage he knew what was happening around Paris. So he probably had more of an idea. We, like I said, once we were in there, we didn't want to go back out on the street maybe just because we didn't know what was happening essentially. Mm. But he very bravely, he and his neighbour, got me to a hospital.
There you go. All that kindness from strange thing. You hear really nasty things about Parisians, but actually, they're just the same as anybody else, kind and decent.
Fantastic people, really.
I mean, we've made friends for life with the girls that were with us in the apartment. I mean, we're in contact a lot.
Yeah.
We love them. And it feels... The doctor and his wife came to visit us, David, in hospital 2 days after, and it felt like... Your granddad had just walked in or something.
It
just
felt
like family was with us. Because we were adamant that family did not come to Paris to be with us. We just wanted everyone to be safe and not risk it.
Like. Yeah. So you stayed in hospital there, then you came home and you went into the mater.
Yeah.
But those people visited you in hospital. Isn't that remarkable?
Fantastic of them. Yeah. They came in and it was on the Sunday, I think. It would have been 2 days after.
Yeah.
They were amazing just to chat to them, and he was saying how he was happy to see me looking better than I was that night. But they were amazing people, really. I've nothing but amazing things to say and think about them.
And you were x-rayed and all that there. And did they operate on you in Paris?
I was operated in Paris once to essentially remove the bullet and realign my... again, the bones in my foot were just pulverized. There's hundreds of fractures. There's, you know, such a lot of damage done to it. So they had to remove the bullet and some little shards of bone to just make sure and stop it bleeding also, because it had bled all night, you know. So, I was operated there. When I came back to Dublin, I had 3 further operations and to close up the wound and to...
And how are you now and what's the prognosis?
I'm recovering as good as can be expected, but it'll be a very long road of recovery.
Really?
A lot of... Like, there's a lot of pain in it. There's a lot of physio ahead. There's a lot of... Again, it'll affect me for the rest of my life. I think my possibilities of running and playing sport like I was is gone. It'll be arthritic. I'll have arthritis in my foot. Again, I don't like to complain too much because it could be a million times worse and we could not be here, but it's recovering as good as it can, but it'll be a long process.
Right. You know? Now, you two were living together. Now you're living apart.
Yeah.
Get engaged and break up. What happened there? You were in an apartment in Cork.
We were living in an apartment in Cork, which we loved. It was just perfect. Was nice, but when this happened, it wasn't... David couldn't scoot around the apartment in the wheelchair. It was too tight in the corridors and things like that, so it just became obvious pretty fast that we would, one, need the support of our families, but
for recovery's sake
you need to be in comfort, and it wouldn't have been comfortable.
So you're in Louth now, and you're in Cork. And when is the big day, or do you know?
We're still working on that idea. I think we'll see how far I get on my recovery and see how the year goes.
And in terms of work, I mean, I presume that you can't go to work.
No, again, it'll...
You were a chartered surveyor. Was that outdoors or was it within the office?
It would have been both. You know, you'd be on site and office based, but currently it's just not possible with the way my leg is.
Right.
Again, I'm thankful that in time I will be able to return to my work, and there's so many people that night won't have that chance. And,
that's very true.
And have been injured
far
more seriously than I am. So, you know, I'm lucky, and I think we both are, so we just want to be thankful for that.
Be thankful for it indeed. People just getting on saying terrible experience for both of you in Paris. Good to highlight issues facing those who are permanently in wheelchairs.
Absolutely.
Particularly who don't have the option of escaping on crutches.
Yeah.
Here, I have to say to that,
absolutely.
I was just saying, I did a stint in a wheelchair myself. By gum, it's an eye-opener.
Absolutely.
How difficult life is.
I have such admiration for people that can, you know, use them all the time, you know, so well. I find it's a real eye-opener when you have to try and do it yourself.
It's like
for
an
while.
Obstacle race. I mean, even just
absolutely.
Opening doors. I mean, this place is no better than anywhere else. The doors are so heavy, you can't do it on your own.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and all sorts of things. And then in inclines... Oh, wheelchair access, my foot. Anyway, we'll move on. Marion, my friend's son was in the Bataclan and got out alive. I'd be happy to put them in touch with each other.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That'd be great.
That would be really
I think
good.
It'd be good to hear from other people that would have been there.
I would have thought so.
Yeah.
Because presumably, talking to us, we still don't know what you guys went through, even though you're pretty good at describing it. But that whole sense of what was going on. Oh, were you aware? I should have asked you that. Were you, you saw this, the outline of this man at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then when you were going, I presume you just ran like the devil
didn't
look back. Because they all blew themselves up afterwards, didn't they?
I think... What happened was the man who was closest to us, I think actually the police might have shot his vest and that's how he was activated.
He
but I think the other two did detonate themselves, yeah.
Right. And as they did indeed at the Stade de France, just as we were talking about disability and so on, the Shelburne Hotel have been in contact. They confirmed there was an evacuation last night in line with their safety protocols. They say it wasn't related to a fire. An internal investigation is underway and they're making no further comment at this moment. Did it cross your mind going into a hotel that the fifth floor is not the most appropriate place?
I don't think it did, really. But then again, you don't expect...
things to go wrong.
You think there would have been something in place to make sure that if you are on the fifth floor, you have access to get out pretty easily and there shouldn't be any problem.
Another caller says there are evacuation chairs specifically for that purpose that are pushed downstairs easily. The hotel has added to that couple's distress. I wish the couple the very best in their recovery from that horrific experience in Paris. And more or less so say all of us.
Yeah.
Does it haunt you? Can you put it behind you? Well, you've a permanent reminder.
Yeah, I think I'll always remember it. But it's still quite early in the process. And I think in time, I hope we'll maybe not put it behind us, but, you know, come to terms with what happened that night.
It's just something that we'll never forget and we shouldn't forget. Because you see these things on the news and you say, that's terrible. And you do just put it to the back of your mind
you
and you move
channel,
on.
Yeah.
But it's kind of... what we saw that night should never be forgotten.
No.
All those people who died, it was for nothing. And it's a tragedy in my eyes.
Yes, the sadness of the waste of people's lives. And again, people have been injured. That'll affect them far more seriously than me for the rest of their lives.
Do you... I mean, we've been through our troubles and terrible things were done on this island, let it be said too. Does it affect your attitude to politics and world issues and these so-called ISIS people?
Well, no, not really, because they're extremists. You can't try and understand them because they've just been brainwashed and they think that they're doing the right thing, much like we in our everyday lives think that we're doing the right thing. Mm. That's their beliefs and we have ours and they're completely different. And
right.
I
know it's kind of, it could sound like a trite question and I don't mean it to be. Do you, have you or do you figure you should have counselling? Or do you just want to get on with things?
We want to get on with things, but in time, maybe if we feel that it would benefit us, yes. But I've had a counselling session and I don't think it did me much good at all. I think it was maybe a little bit too soon. We were advised by doctors in the hospital that veterans from Iraq and places like that, it's shown that if you speak immediately after it, your recovery will be better. But I don't know if it's like that for us, because we weren't preparing for war. We weren't preparing to see what we saw that night. We're not soldiers. We're just two people going to a concert. And I think we'll process that ourselves and maybe get a bit of help later on.
It'll play its part in time.
But yeah. Okay, well, listen, thank you both very much indeed for coming in. And I wish you both well, obviously, but I wish you a recovery as well.
Thank you.
You will walk again, will you?
Yes. Again,
what will the bones fuse, or what if they
again? I think a normal break takes about 8 weeks. It'll possibly be 12 months before my bones are fused to a good standard, we'll say. And it will depend on how physio goes and everything. But I think I will walk, but it will be a long process.
Right, to get there. And is it painful?
Yes, it would be painful. It's not as bad as it was initially, obviously enough, and after the operations. But it does cause discomfort on a daily basis. You know, it's there. You know, your foot has been through something.
Right. So. Well, anyway, the very best to the two of you, and every happiness for the rest of your lives.
Thank you.
Will you go back to Paris, do you think?
In time, hopefully. Yeah.
In time, I think. Yeah, it's like I said, it's not the city's fault. It's a beautiful place.
It is a beautiful place. And, well, you've had a lovely experience of Parisian people. I mean, that was just wonderful how they helped you. It really, really was. Another caller saying, awful experience, but they have survived, thank God. Are they getting support? She's also talking about the counselling, saying awful demons for years to come, I'm sure. And that's perhaps worse than the physical side. The best of luck to them. And another saying, what a fantastic young couple. And watch the BBC Newsnight report inside the Bataclan. It was truly horrific. I wish that couple all the best in their lives. So there you are. So say all of us.
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks a lot. We'll take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.